So my talk's called A Journey into the Forest. I'm going to start with a poem by William Wordsworth that really kind of embodies his view about nature. Up, up, my friend, and quit your books, or surely you'll grow double. Up, up, my friend, and clear your look. Why all this toil and trouble? The sun above the mountain's head, a freshening lustre mellow, through all the long green fields has spread his first sweet evening yellow. Books, 'tis a dull and endless strife. Come, hear the woodland linnet. How sweet his music on my life. There's more of wisdom in it. And hark, how blithe the throstle sings. He too is no mean preacher. Come forth into the light of things. Let nature be your teacher. She has a world of ready wealth, our minds and hearts to bless. Spontaneous wisdom breathed by health, truth breathed by cheerfulness. One impulse from a vernal wood may teach you more of man, of moral evil and of good, than all the sages can. Sweet is the law which nature brings, our meddling intellect misshapes the beauteous forms of things we murder to dissect. Enough of science and of art, close up those barren leaves. Come forth and bring with you a heart that watches and receives. So nature can be a mirror to us, that everything is in a process of dynamic change. Nothing remains static, and there is impermanence, a nature. Everything formed is a constant process of change. So using an example of, say, rain, the label rain, which appears to denote a thing, rain is nothing but a process of drops of water falling from the skies. So apart from this process, the activity of raining, there is no rain as such, which could be expressed by a seemingly static nominal concept. So the very elements of solidity, liquidity, heat and mobility, the building blocks of nature, are all ever-changing phenomena. And you might have experienced this fluidity when practicing maybe the stupa practice or six elements practice or maybe just being out in nature. We might also have experienced this artificial notion of self as not separate and not different from this fluidity, this arising and ceasing which takes place in the vast awareness. This is not me, this is not mine, I am not this. And all is arising in this vast awareness, not just nature, but all experience. Buddhism, Bhante says in his interviews with Subhuti about the importance of imagination in the spiritual life, that if we perceive the world as dead, enlightenment is impossible. And in his paper, Reimagining the Buddha, Subhuti says, in Living with Awareness, Sangharakshita remarks, I would go so far as to say that a universe conceived of as dead cannot be a universe in which one stands any chance of attaining enlightenment. This intriguing statement seems of a piece with what he has said elsewhere about the need for a revival of paganism if Buddhism is truly to take root in the West. What Sangharakshita is asserting is that we must rediscover the capacity to directly sense life in the world around us, even to empathise with it, a faculty that our ancestors had and that we too have innately, but that today we usually lose as we leave childhood, especially in a culture dominated by materialist assumptions. A depth of connection with the living world has been wildly lost, and we are now poorer for it. And Bhante wrote a poem in Kalimpong in 1952 called Animist. I feel like going on my knees to this old mountain and these trees. 300 or 400 years ago, I could have worshipped them, I know. But if one did so in this age, they'd lock him in a padded cage. We've made the world look mean and small and lost the wonder of it all. So we've been conditioned out of seeing nature as gods and goddesses. Christianity came along and demonised them, created the view that there is only one God and Jesus became the only intermediary, seeing these demons as bad and wrong. Whereas before, the Greeks saw them as daemons to help or hinder, fear or respect. And now we have a scientific view of the world, deducing things in our need to understand it. We've taken out the wonder. But people still do like and want to see the magic of the world, and this is demonstrated by people's interest in the fantasy books, fantasy films, Lord of the Rings. My son is just trapped in a computer world a lot of the time, anime, a Japanese world. And meditation also gives you wonder at the world and shows that science hasn't obliterated everything. And it's because we've been conditioned to see the world as dead in a utilitarian way that we're destroying it, and it's the cause of the environmental issues that we have now. We see the world as other, just like we see other people as other for our use. But I think as women we can be more in touch with nature through our connection with the moon and cycles, birth and death. We bleed and go through hormonal fluxes monthly, and if we reflect on this really deeply and not tumbled round by it, really become aware of this, we can see into the nature of impermanence through our own nature and how we are connected to the earth. So with the title of this retreat that we were given, I'd thought of the Vasilisa story, you know, going into the wild wood reminded me of Vasilisa going into the forest and meeting Baba Yaga and taking her doll with her, and she went to fetch the light and to bring the light back. So this myth of entering the forest is very archetypal of the journey, and many old stories like it, like Snow White, for instance. There's many stories like this. So what is this journey that we enter upon when we go into the forest? For Vasilisa, she went in knowing very well that Baba Yaga would devour her on sight. What she met with was a very unusual sight in the clearing of the forest, but she entered the house of Baba Yaga and was careful of the questions she asked so as not to become too old. What she found in the heart of the deep dark forest in scary Baba Yaga's house, locked in by gates she could not control, was the nature of reality. And she could not have done this without the doll, which was passed on from her mother, and to her mother, from her mother before, that she fed regularly. So she nourished the doll and spoke to her, and her doll did her work for her while she slept, because the morning is wiser than the evening. And when she went back, she found that the light had not been on in the house since she had left, and the stepmother and stepsisters were burned up. So this journey into the forest is our own spiritual journey, the journey which we each individually take in diving to the depths of our being. And this is no easy journey, no mean feat. There is pain, and when we discover our power to hurt and harm others, and that we've been doing this all along unknowingly, unwittingly asleep. So it's a journey of waking up to how things are, seeing this, getting the reality check will give us the impetus to change, to transform, to cultivate awareness so that we don't cause harm, or we cause harm a little less each time. But it's difficult to witness the consequences of ours and others' actions, difficult to stay with the dukkha that is inherent in samsara in our world. So we run out of the forest to the nearest pub, offie, dealer, Costa, Topshop, Next, Amazon, HMV, Xbox, whatever it is for you, to take away the pain, to make me happier and life easier, to bury my head in the sand. But we journey into the darkness in order to ask Baba Yaga the questions, but not too many, to learn about ourselves and the nature of reality. We go into the dark to get the light. Walking through, making that journey to the heart of the forest, we're gently leaning into and staying with the dukkha. Our heart breaks open and allows us to fully experience that which we were shut off to previously because of fear, because of fear of feeling, we just couldn't go there. But there is the unconscious mistake. If we see the entrance to the forest and choose not to go in because Baba Yaga will devour us, we choose to stay safely on the edge of the forest in the light. We're distracting ourselves, not feeling, cutting off, deadening us. We're walking around like zombies. I feel like the darkness that I've been through and not turned away from, but leaned gently into or grabbed onto it, knowing it will transform me, has allowed me to feel joy more, to feel more connected to my life, the world and people around me. I experience spontaneous feelings of joy and contentment that were not present in my experience previously, because in my attempt to control my experience, to cut off or distract myself from unpleasant Vedana, pain or dukkha, I had also cut off the possibility of experiencing joy and contentment as well. In order to even contemplate entering the forest, we need to have faith in some form, whether that be our dal or the knowledge that if Baba Yaga eats us, well, that's it. The way of life to which this faith leads you may sometimes be difficult, but you know in your heart of hearts that you're on the right track. So there is a happiness in a deeper sense than mere pleasurable feeling, as Bhante says, the happiness that comes from faith. So can you skip down that dark forest track? So there needs to be faith, but there also needs to be courage, a willingness to go there, to find whatever it is that's there. And it is the unknown, that which is in the unconscious, that's what we're afraid of, isn't it? So what's the benefit of going there? The symbolic journey of travelling through the hells to reach the heaven, as Dante did. Although it feels like hell at the time, it can be a journey to a new way of being. Vasilisa had no idea that her stepmother and stepsisters would be burned up by the light. She knew no other way of being existed other than that which was. But she was kind and she fed her dal. So this is a quote from Marianne Williamson. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking, so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine, as children do. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So we're going there to find the light. So it is the light which is our deepest fear rather than the dark. I felt like I was embarking on a journey into the underworld in 2007 when I started visiting Atala regularly in London where he works. He's an order member who's well known for his work in psychosynthesis with people around the movement, and I was very daunted to meet him the first time because of his amazing reputation. And he decided he liked me and that he would like to work with me, and I regularly went for 3 years until I was too pregnant with my youngest son to climb the stairs to his top floor flat. This was a journey, not up the stairs. It was also coincided with my journey to ordination, but was one with him that saw me coexisting with myth, Greek gods, stories and dream work. I loved working with my dreams and other people's. And last year I did a 6-month course with him in a group where we did dream workshops. I don't find I remember my dreams easily, but when I do, there's a level of profundity to them. And I feel that contained within is a message from the dark, from the unconscious, like a message in a bottle, which more often than not I don't understand, but sometimes I do. And when I do, there is a feeling that there is a deeper knowing, that I have discovered a little more of myself, another room in the house. So it's a bit like dropping into a deep sleep and the dal doing all the work. Rumi says, humankind is being led along an evolving course. And though we seem to be sleeping, there is an inner wakefulness that directs the dreams, and that will eventually startle us back to the truth of who we are. Although I particularly found and do find it difficult to speak to large numbers of people, i.e. above 6 or 7, on Attila's course I found it particularly difficult to speak and open up in that situation. So I've chosen to do a 9-day retreat with him doing exactly the same thing, because I found it so difficult the last time, to trust, to open. I don't know what it is that provokes that reaction in me, but how will I find out if I don't do it again, if I choose to stay outside the forest? I want to move towards what is uncomfortable to me, to see through it, to find out what lies beneath, and to not be scared or feel fearful anymore. To find out what lies beneath the negative habits, what drives them and gives them power, so that I can bring them into the light or take light to them, to transform into energy for the good. I imagine that there is a wealth of untapped energy and power there, an undiscovered gold mine. So this is Dawna Markova. I will not die an unlived life. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, more accessible, to loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance, to live, so that which came to me as seed goes on as blossom, and that which came to me as blossom goes on as fruit. So this journeying into the wildwood is like staying on the edge of things with our practice, always feeling that uncomfortable edge, that bite, and there is the fertile ground for growth. If you are walking along in the dark and see Mara, simply say, "I see you, Mara," just as the Buddha did. Always actively putting ourselves in conditions that we find uncomfortable, where we feel vulnerable, risking our significance. So this is a current theme in my life at the moment, trying to teach a bit more, trying to be more upfront, move towards people, look deeply at what is mine, taking responsibility and looking at what conditions I can put in place to transform. And this process is painful and not comfortable for me, and it's not my natural being. And I'm finding that more Maras are being revealed as I choose to do these things. More of me is being revealed to myself. And I have faith that I'm moving closer to my goal, even though I sometimes take the wrong path through the forest, the wrong fork in the path, which leads away rather than to Baba Yaga's house. But because I have the right conditions around me, my path loops back around in the same direction, or I pick myself up from the ground at the side of the path, after being unconscious for who knows how long, dust myself off and carry on. And I will continue to do so, because I want to be more and more fully Sujani. I haven't finished yet.
No.
More open, more loving, clear and confident, and to be able to do these things more easily. So I think retreats are like journeys into the forest too for me, and they've contributed massively and integrally to my journey. And I've just come back from Tara Loka, and before that Tiratna Loka, for a week with my preceptor. And I find that I discover aspects of myself, different aspects depending on what's going on. But there are positive conditions, which means I can open up on retreats and to open the Pandora's box and take something out and have a good look at it. So I've decided never to go longer than 6 months without a retreat, a long retreat, because I lose myself somehow in the world. In my life, the busyness, even though it seems positive and supportive, is not enough. I need that journey within. I need to balance my life in the world with my life outside of the world somehow. So my journey through the forest, connect with my values, with my goal. And I joke sometimes that if something hasn't come up on retreat and I did not end up in tears, then I want my money back. Yeah. Falling apart is the way forward. Although at the time it's painful and there's no way to see this, it's so painful you can't see it as positive at the time. But there is learning to come from that pain. No pain, no gain. We're breaking open to be larger, in being more than we were before, broader. So this is Roshani, that this poem was given to me on a One Moment at a Time retreat, which was led by Vidyamala at Taraloka. I went there just because I was in just so much pain. And Vidyamala is an order member that works with people using mindfulness techniques to manage pain. So she was doing my meditation reviews with me. There is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is a sorrow beyond all grief, which leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength. There is a hollow space too vast for words, through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry deeper than all sound, whose serrated edges cut the heart as we break open to the place inside, which is unbreakable and whole, while learning to sing. So when I was young, I loved trees before I became a Buddhist. I thought I was a treeist. They were a symbol to me of the spiritual life, of the ideal, and they reflect impermanence in their leaves. And I love the beautiful autumn colours, and I love going to Kew Gardens to see the trees at that time of year. And my dad had a forest in the back of his garden, which seemed so huge to me at the time, but actually it's quite small now. And I built dens out of the ferns, trying to get away from my evil stepmother. Imagined all sorts of beings living there. And I just love the green, the vibrant green, and trees are just, they're rooted to the earth and they're flexible. And I found this symbol is really inspiring. In 2000, I went to my first Buddhafield festival, and in 2003, we had our first Buddhafield East meeting. And in 2004, we put on our first summer gathering. And last year, we celebrated our 10th year. And at Buddhafield, I feel we're practicing closer to how things are. We're in the elements. We're more directly in tune or connected to how things are. And when it rains, you know it's raining. And when it's hot and sunny, you know. It's not like how we are in the world, in our air-conditioned offices and boxes, alienated from the world. And when I'm in the field, seeing the ground, the sky, and feeling the air, there's no ceiling. I feel I can be more myself, I can be freer. I see men dressed as women, face painted, outdoor rituals where most people are dressed up, music, singing, drumming. We go back to our tribal ways of being, and because of the positive conditions, we can open up and discover aspects of ourselves we were not aware of before. And maybe that is with a velour catsuit and elf ears or a tutu and wings and a wand, or naked in a hot tub under the stars. It's a journey. But Buddhafield isn't easy. It's not easy to create a Buddhafield. We're up against the elements, walking into the forest like sitting in the Vajrasana, the place where the Buddha sat when he attained enlightenment. But here we are in the conditions that are best for us individually to progress. It's not always comfortable, internally or externally, but there would not be any progress if it was always comfortable. So the Buddha sat under the rose apple tree in a state of absorption or receptivity. And he thought about when he was younger, when he'd sat watching people ploughing a field, absorbed, with no effort. And it was that led him to an understanding of the nature of reality. He went and found a Bodhi tree and sat under it, determined, committed and courageously, until he became free. And on this journey he met Mara, just on the brink of freedom. So he touched the earth and called the earth goddess to witness. relying on his own practice, experience, confidence, and we can do this too. We can focus on this rather than telling the stories we tell ourselves, turning the arrows to flowers, and he did, and we can do this too. Touch the earth and value our own effort towards enlightenment. This particular time of the Buddha's journey connects me to my Yidam, Akshobhya, with his earth-touching Bhumi Sparsha Mudra, rooted to the earth just like a tree, with the wisdom strength of the Vajra at his heart. When Mara struck, he touched the earth, staying put and believing that this is our place of wisdom finding. Because if you leg it again, internally or externally, psychologically or spiritually, what is going to change? We can not only journey into the forest alone, but when we enter it, we develop spiritual friendship with those also doing the same thing on that path. And when there are difficulties with our friends, it's just so painful. I find it so painful. And what would we do in the world if we fell out with somebody? We'd just never speak to them again. But we don't do this in the Sangha. We don't stop coming along to the Buddhist centre because we don't like someone or they don't like us. Because that would be like shooting myself in the foot. So we continue along our journey, attending women's group, mitra study, GFR group or chapter. And we see that person more clearly. And something may change, drop away, or there may be a bigger issue that requires talking about. But it takes so much courage to be vulnerable in that space, and faith, otherwise we'd not be there in the first place. Working through things with friends, others also working in the Dharma, can be a real place for transformation. To keep going back there, entering into communication, working through, owning. It's just so painful for me. It feels like I surrender my life every time. A mini spiritual death. Like I give myself up every time I decide to walk in the forest, knowing Baba Yaga may eat me up. But I ask myself, what have I got to lose? There is no me, no self to protect. There is just this flow of arising and ceasing. And as there is no me and no you in that moment or any moment, there is so much more going on underneath. So much more than what it looks like is going on. It's never just me and you. Go into that. Be curious about what's underneath. And then on the other side of that, journey through the forest or through the hells, is a depth of connection between us, between this bunch of samskaras or habits, tendencies, and that bunch of samskaras. And a depth of trust that you've both gone through this, demonstrated commitment to each other, to the path, to going for refuge, a deepening of friendship. And in a sense, the relationship, or the third body as Robert Bly calls it, has been on a journey through the hells to the heaven. So finally then, with all these examples of walking into the forest, our spiritual death, with our dull, We will be okay as long as we know and feed that what feeds that which nourishes us. Or as in Dante's Inferno, journeying through the hells and reaching the heavens, we're going forth bringing a heart that watches and receives, choosing to risk our significance to grow, to shine our light for the benefit of others, falling apart into grief, sorrow, despair, breaking open to the place inside that is unbreakable and whole. So from that brokenness, there comes the unbroken. Let's go back to our pagan roots and see nature as alive. See the aliveness in the trees. See the fairies dancing among the leaves, the goblins, the gnomes and the water sprites. Personify the energy you see and feel and have empathy. It feels as we do. Use metta to connect us to ourselves and the world. Come to Buddhafield East and practice in nature and ask yourself whether you're taking the journey into the forest and are you willing to do that? Knowing what nourishes you, what does nourish you? Are you too comfortable and what can you change? And what could be on the other side of this situation, through this situation? Risk your significance to truly live. So that which comes to you as blossom goes on as fruit. think we're going into groups now.